All right, everybody. I'd like to welcome a very special guest, Mr. Michael Esty, who runs a lot of successful brands on Amazon, as well as is a partner in a very large and hugely successful private label skincare company, manufacturer, which we'll get into. But welcome to the show, Michael.
Well, thank you. Great to be here. Glad to be here. It's been an interesting journey, kind of getting along all these different, have my hands in kind of a lot of these little buckets here. But yeah, I have an Amazon business, also partners in manufacturing business that sells products to the Amazon business, and kind of have my hands in all of those pots, but I'm trying to scale it and grow it every year. We're definitely having a lot of success with it, but there's so many moving parts to it. It's a lot to keep up with at this point, but there was a beginning where it was just me and myself and my ideas, and with one product back in 2014.
Nice. Southern Vertigo, that's a great start. That's a fantastic time to have started. And I'm going to try to ask one question to everybody on the show, and it's going to be, good, when did you start, which you just told me, but how much capital, how much money did you start with, and then how have you approached the subject of loans or scaling?
All right. So initially, when I started, I did not have really much capital at all. I think I actually started the whole business with a couple of grand.
On a
credit card, nonetheless.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
So I think what I believe I did is in the beginning, I actually had to come up with cash. I couldn't use the credit card. So I had to take the cash out of the credit card with a 3% fee to start off with.
Like a cash advance?
Right? Yeah. So I did that with for the initial investment. I think I sent a couple hundred, 300-400 products initially.
Units, right?
Units, yeah. Not products, individual units to Amazon FBA warehouse when I first started. So I had a couple hundred. And I remember when I first started, I've listed the product. I have no idea what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And it was started selling one a week.
Okay.
So it was about one a week.
Oh, wow. Okay. And what was your strategy, and like, why did you get into this? You know, you got into what, creams or something like that?
Yeah. So the initial category that, well, the little background story, I grew up in cosmetics and skincare. My parents had a cosmetic and skincare company from when I was a little whipper, you know, I was 12 years old. I was actually working in their cosmetics company.
Oh,
when I was 12. So,
oh, nice. Okay. No liabilities there.
Yeah. I was also in California. Yeah. Anyway, we don't have to go to that story, but as I grew to 16, 17, it was just an industry that I was so familiar with that I actually were working for all these companies that were selling skincare products. And I was doing it at trade shows. So I was, so for years from the age of 16, 17, I was traveling around the US selling products at trade shows. I was familiar with one-on-one sales.
Mm.
So, and I knew skincare as well. I knew people wanted, I knew all the objections to why they wouldn't buy it. So I got familiar by the time, and I did that traveling salesperson selling skincare products till I was about 25.
Wow. That's quite some years, maybe 7 years.
Yeah. About 7 years of traveling. I was on a plane 3 times a week traveling, right? And going to these different trade shows, selling products. Eventually, the way I really started before I even got into Amazon, I did start my own company with starting my own trade shows, right? Mm. So
you mean you're taking your brand to trade shows, or you made your own trade show?
So what I did was, I developed a brand. I had a name for it. Yeah. I submitted a trademark, and then I got the labels designed, and I started taking these, and I took these 6 products to a trade show to try to sell it, and I lost money.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then I did another trade show, and I lost money. So that's at that point, and now I was still back in the traveling game, but with my own company that was losing money every month, right? So now I was in debt, and
that's the real life of an entrepreneur.
Yeah. I was at the beginning, I thought, hey, the company that I'm selling all these products for is, making all this money. I'm just working on commission. Yeah. Right. So I was like, cool. I'll be the guy making all the money now. Yeah. Little did I know, you know?
Yeah,
so,
So why were you losing money? Were your products less successful than the other one? Like the other one had like a kind of brand name to it, or why would you lose money if it's private label, but you're doing the same thing?
Cause I was buying quantities of inventory, private label. And I would go to a trade show, and I couldn't sell or move all that inventory. I didn't have enough sales staff. I didn't have My sales staff weren't educated enough to move that much product in a single day or a weekend. So I'd literally come home from a trade show. So at first I'd invest in the little trade show or craft show or home and garden show, right? Where all these people showed up and I pay $1,500 to be in there plus the setup fees plus, right? So I'm already $2,000 into this thing. And then I now have, whatever X amount of dollars invested in inventory as well on top of that. And I couldn't move all the inventory. And then now I need to book the next trade show.
Because it's an expiration, I'm guessing, or what? Like the product would expire.
No, the product wasn't going to expire. Okay. I had 2 to 3 years on the expiration of the product. It wasn't that. It was just that I didn't clear enough money to pay myself, pay my staff, and book the next trade show to keep going, right? So it was, I only really did that for about 2 weeks. And it was just, I was like, this is not going to go anywhere, right? So then at that point, that's when I discovered some Amazon training. So I discovered people were basically crushing on Amazon and killing it. Now I actually didn't buy the course. I literally figured out. I didn't buy any course. Okay, right. No course. I literally just started listing products on Amazon myself to see if I could do it myself. Right. And without paying exorbitant amount of money for some course. So, and I did, and I got to selling a product a week.
A week. Exactly. That was a raging success.
So I was making $20 a week, for my own business now. So the only thing I did at that point now was I heard about, you know, an Amazon.
And did you take the same product, by the way?
I took the same product.
The same one you were selling on the streets, on the trade shows,
same product.
Oh,
I just took one of them.
Oh, okay.
I needed to move the product somehow.
So you already had a trademark and everything.
Yeah. So amazing. I went in a little bit differently than most people. I didn't have to develop that. And these weren't products that I really researched or anything. These were just generic cream, like a face and body cream, you know, sling at a trade show, you know. So I listed that, it wasn't selling. So what I did next was I did buy a course. So I ended up buying this amazing selling machine course. Right. And that taught me enough to learn that I should actually niche my product. So I took that same face and body cream that I was selling and I relabeled it.
You don't have to go into what.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
go into the label.
So a niche, guys. So for example, that would just be instead of selling a scissor, you can say like this is a barber scissor. Well, of course, a barber scissor is specific, but like it's a scissor for a chicken or something like that. And then that way, you're targeting a specific audience as opposed to just hey, I have a cream or hey, I have selling a scissor or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's niching down. That's what that means.
Yeah, so you can sell like in that particular circumstance, like there was I could sell a face and body cream, or I can sell a anti dark circle face cream, right? Yeah.
And essentially it could be the same cream because of course a body cream could go for the eyes, but of course there's also different formulations for the eyes that you could do.
Yeah, to specify,
as well.
In this particular case, it was really a face cream and it did have, from what I know in the market that I already was selling it in, it did work amazing for around the eyes, right? Okay. So like that wasn't the niche I chose, but that's a good example of, I can relabel the product and I can hit on a hole somewhere in the market that no one's really hitting. Back then, there was so many holes, in Amazon that literally, like, you search for a product that you desired, that you wanted, and there was nobody selling it. So there was opportunity, and there's still that opportunity. It's just now you got to be a little smarter, a little more clever.
Yeah. Back in the day, again, like people, you could launch a lot of things that didn't have a niche, like you're saying. So it's a more open market, but still. I mean, there's people crushing it from zero today as well.
Well, the difference is back then, the audience of Amazon was about a 20th the size of today.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So in the early 2010, 2014, Amazon has, as we've all known, 10x'd, right? Mm-hmm. So like, or even higher, right? So then the audience has grown substantially of Amazon. Every year they're growing, right? So that's one thing too. The advantage of today is that there is so many people shopping every hour on Amazon. There wasn't that many people. So even if you had an amazing niche, doesn't mean a lot of people were looking for it, right? So the audience, the visits to your page wasn't as much.
Yeah.
So that's the opportunity now where there's plenty. There's actually an abundance. There's too many shoppers on Amazon.
Yeah, and there was a stat which I like to talk about a lot, which is like the number of active sellers from last year to this year did not actually change in percentage by very much, but actually Amazon basically doubled their sales. So it went from like 300 gross marketplace sales, 300 billion to like 500 billion. almost double, but the sellers selling over 100,000 did not double, right?
I did not know that. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Okay. So that means that the market a lot more opportunity than I thought.
Yeah. A lot more. And it's just, anyway, it's coming. And of course, e-commerce is growing. So, but okay, cool. So you did that. You figured it out. And then that product, once you niched it down, started taking off right away, or yep. How?
It was pretty quick, actually. So that first product that I had, after I finally niched it, now I'm by this point, by the way, I have no money, and yep. I think I was about 40,000 in debt,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
With no viable, sustainable source of income.
Fine.
So it was my hair was falling out, but what I did was, so I niched it, and then after I was literally, I think, I was so dedicated to making this work that I was in Amazon and doing whatever marketing I knew how to do at that time, up to 18 hours or 20 hours a day.
Yep.
With I was doing it sometimes till 4 in the morning.
What could you do? You had one product at that time?
Yeah, I had one product.
So how much can you do? Like, that's a really good thing, because people say, like, what do I work on all day? And a lot of people, like, check their sales and do this, and I'm like, well, I could say things, but what about you? What are you doing in those 18 hours? Like, you have one product that's up. What could you do to sell it?
A lot of what I did was any additional training I could find anywhere, mm-hmm. right? So the one thing I knew that I didn't know how to do this, mm-hmm. right? So obviously I was ready to learn everything I could. When going inside of Amazon Seller Central, there's more now, but back then there was plenty of stuff to look at,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So back then I would spend a lot of my time looking at every single tool. The tool I spent tons of time with and playing with was pay-per-click advertising, PPC.
Yeah, Campaign manager,
right? So I kept playing with that and seeing, wait a minute, there's more keywords to hit.
Mm-hmm.
There's more directions to go in here. And then I was like, wait a minute, what if I also used Google's already really well-established pay-per-click advertising platform to link to Amazon? Like, mm-hmm. what if I tried that too?
Well, so you're running Google Ads to your Amazon page, right?
Yeah. Okay. In the beginning, I was also testing that out to see what happened. And then I was like, wait a minute, I know that also Facebook advertising is a good source of traffic. Now I'm new to marketing, right? I'm just playing with all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went to Facebook, sending traffic to the Amazon URL as well too, mm-hmm. to my product specifically, I was just spending hours just testing to see what worked, what didn't work.
Mm.
You know, and also then I started making videos on the product, right? And I was like, cool.
Well, that's early at that time, like 2014, 2015?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so yeah. I started making videos on the product and making ads based on those videos and putting the video and uploading it wherever I can. And also I was focused on figuring out new ways to get reviews on the product,
mm-hmm,
right? So there was just more a lot of time figuring stuff out.
Yep.
And the more time I had in each single tool or each single thing, the more confidence I gained with it. So I would typically want to, if I was in Google, I'd spend a whole week in Google, because
mm-hmm.
I didn't know, and I couldn't afford to hire a Google expert to do all this, right? I had to do it myself in the beginning.
Yep.
So I'd spend a whole week just getting excited and playing around with Google. I'd spend a whole week playing around with pay-per-click advertising and Amazon Campaign Manager. I spent a whole week on YouTube sometimes, mm-hmm. just to play with it.
Did you get success on YouTube? Like some video
No. Yeah. And I didn't get success on Google either. But I did actually.
But Google Ads, you're saying? Google Ads didn't.
In the beginning, no, I was doing them wrong, right? But eventually I did, right? Eventually, but at that time, I actually was familiar enough with the platform to, you know, by the time I wanted to go back around to Google, I was like, hey, I've spent a whole 2 weeks in this platform now. I kind of know some what you should do and what you shouldn't mm-hmm, do, mm-hmm. right? So getting familiar with all the aspects and really just figuring it out, each step of it was, you know, a lot of that 18 hours for me, it was very exciting. I couldn't get off it. I was addicted to trying new things.
Yeah. Let's see. Can we get one more sale a day?
Whatever.
Yeah.
And I would check my sales probably on an hourly basis, see mm-hmm. if what I did had resulted, because sales volume is so small at that point.
Yeah, you can see.
It's really easy to see if anything you did made a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, doing that, and after you kind of now learn, I learned enough and I got that one product, I believe to about $10,000 a month.
Okay.
Within that first month.
Oh, wow. That's very fast.
Yeah, it was very fast, right? Just from spending so much time playing around with it, right?
So of all those things, right? The Google ads, the Facebook ads, YouTube, maybe YouTube ads, just YouTube organic?
Just YouTube videos.
Yeah. Amazon ads. whatever else you did, what were the things that did make a difference?
Right? I mean, naturally, now looking back, I know what the biggest thing that made a difference is campaign manager.
Yeah,
Amazon. Naturally, Amazon's advertising is what really did it. And then looking back, yeah, if I would have time travel, go back, like, hey, Michael, put all your attention, everything you got into that one thing and stop messing around with Google for a little bit, right? Yeah. And learn to scale that and learn to grow it and learn to really take advantage of every single keyword and et cetera, et cetera. And there wasn't, back then, it wasn't like no software really to manage it. Mm-hmm. It was all brand new.
Yeah.
So you had to figure out how to do it yourself, right? Now there's all this cool software, which is even a bigger opportunity now. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, pull your hair out every 5 minutes going to Seller Central and Campaign Manager. Yeah, that would have been the big thing.
Talking about the Amazon ads and the software, right? I know that you do use Samurai Seller, right? Which is our software.
Absolutely.
And in fact, you're probably one, I would consider you like a power user. You're like, you know a lot of the things in and out. And in fact, I remember I was at your office maybe 6 months ago or a year ago, and you had a guy, you hired a guy, some programmer, and you're doing this whole humongous system of like trying to figure out the bids and the history and all this stuff. And I was like, hey, man, you could do this in Samurai.
Yeah, I remember that. I do remember that.
I mean, wow. Like, I thought that was amazing, though, because exactly what you were trying to build, it seems like we did that.
Yeah,
like,
it was already built. The I mean, we've been using Samurai for... I think that was 2 years ago now.
Oh, was it? Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, the automation that created for years for us to come. I mean, like with the bid optimizer, the bulk keyword editor, and all the little extra tools have been added. Now you can do sponsored brands and et cetera, et cetera. And you can, I mean, the simplicity also of just basic keyword ranking. Mm-hmm. Like if you were to pick a keyword to target, you know, if you want to go find that keyword within Amazon Seller Central,
it's true.
Good luck. Mm-hmm. Like you are not going to find, like if you are selling a, you know, whatever X product, you're selling a
spatula,
right? And you're selling a red spatula on Amazon, right? And then you were like, okay, well, I'm a red spatula. The keyword I want is red spatula. And then you're like, okay, where am I going to find that keyword within my Seller Central campaign? It would take you sometimes hours.
Find it. It's true. And again, some of the guys who are listening are advanced and some of them are not as much. But essentially, in Samurai, you could just search by the keyword on your whole campaigns. In Campaign Manager, you can only go to the campaign itself and then search within the campaign, then for the keyword. If it's not there, that could have several ad groups. I mean, it could get a little bit crazy.
It gets a little crazy.
So for sure, in Samurai, one of the features is you can search either by the search term or by the keyword, and I'll show you everywhere it appears.
So for the strategy of, I mean, the whole... Amazon is a search engine, right? Mm-hmm. It is a competitor to Google but only for products.
Yep.
So the whole name of the game on Amazon is when someone searches for a product like yours or the exact keyword that product hits upon, the name of the game is getting on the top, right? Yep. So using, you can't do that really without and rank those keywords and make sure you're placed with your ad at that top level without using a software program. Mm-hmm. Amazon doesn't have the system within itself to actually be able to do that. So without like a software like program like Samurai Seller, I don't actually know of any other software program that does it besides Samurai mm-hmm. Seller, actually. Mm-hmm. So without Samurai Seller, that you can find that keyword individually, customize your bid for that, and then you can open up a new window and see that you are the top guy, officially, mission accomplished, and now you can start ranking for that keyword. Like that's what most of the sellers do. That's how we do our ranking. That's how we increase our sales. That's how we grow.
Yeah, it is. And I think people do need to really understand that. Like if you are making organic sales and you double down on your ad strategy, you're going to make more sales. Like the ad is a super key thing. Like you could spend 18 hours going to Google, going to Facebook, going to YouTube. But I would say if you're going to spend 18 hours, you probably should spend maybe 14 or 12 hours on Amazon ads.
And then, I would agree, yeah.
And then the rest, I mean, optimize the listing, maybe some keywords, and then maybe put an hour into experimental time. But ads is very much proven. Like,
yeah, I mean, and that's what I tell every new seller that comes on board.
Yeah.
The top thing I mentioned to them is they're like, what should I do? Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I do videos? I'm like, honestly, if you put 90% of your time right now into PPC, mm-hmm. Amazon's PPC, you'll crush it. You could literally do nothing else, and you'll have a huge company that you're very proud of. And you don't have to do Google, you don't have to do YouTube, you don't have to do any of that. You should absolutely, once you get big enough and you have now turned over your PPC to a certain point where you have people running it and now you can start focusing on the big picture and more avenues of revenue. But for now, yeah. I mean, honestly, I could tell you at being in the industry for, eight years now, almost 7 years. I still haven't successfully turned over PPC. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I am still myself in there all the time.
Yep.
Because I get more creative ideas than a lot of staff members do. And sometimes I look at things in a different light than,
yes.
than my people that I have working for me, right? So I still am in there all the time. And I'm currently actively working on turning it over as best I can.
Yep.
But it's very difficult. But in the end, I know that if I spend 80% of my time just on PPC, the company will grow. Still, to this day, years later.
I know some really, really huge sellers, and a lot of their time is literally still spent on ads themselves, the CEO.
Some of the biggest sellers I know.
That's true.
The CEO is still in PPC, chugging away because they haven't figured out how to turn it over yet. But yeah, that's why I say every new seller spend 90% of your time. Spend 100% of your time. Well, besides the day-to-day management inventory, whatever you have delegated, great. But in the end, you're going to grow. Your growth is with PPC right now.
Yep.
Until it's not.
Yep,
until you have it turned over completely and trustworthy. Yep.
That's great. Okay, good. So then you had that product. And then what happened? Did you launch another product? How was your growth from there? And in terms of, did it sustain itself? I mean, I guess you were able to pay yourself at some point, obviously.
At some point,
you're here. How was that expansion from the first product to more products?
Okay, so yeah, I remember this very well. This was a very exciting time for me. This was Christmas, Christmas time, I think 2014.
Mm-hmm.
I finally got around to launching my second product, December 15th-ish, I think about 15th. My second product had now arrived at Amazon.
Mm, that's kind of good timing, almost, sort of?
Kind of, right? But either way, I actually back then you could kind of give away products to friends and family,
and that was totally legit.
And that was very
Amazon
legit.
Amazon loved it. I mean, I think that stopped at the end of 2015, maybe early 2016.
Yep, that's right.
But it was at the time. It's my unbiased review.
Yep.
Right. And so cool. Yeah, it was totally cool.
I loved it.
Compliant with everything.
I can get 50 reviews within 4 days. Right?
It was
great. So I did that. I had all my friends. I literally went through all the people on my Facebook to leave a review.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. So I got my first reviews very quickly, and I knew now that my top focus should be PPC.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went and spent hours and hours in PPC. Mm-hmm. So by this time I wasn't working 18 hours a day anymore. I kind of learned I just was spending probably about 10 hours a day, mostly within the PPC and building more keywords, testing more keywords. Now at this time, my sales were, by the end of December, I had about $30,000 a month in revenue now.
Nice.
So I actually started taking my little, probably about $1,000 a week out for myself personally, but at least start paying my bills.
Okay, good.
before I would start defaulting, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, great. That's awesome. So it was you just did one more product.
And now those two products, my first product, I was lucky. It was the right niche. It was a hole in the market. There were searches for it and no one provided the product. I was lucky. I was more strategic. I don't think luck was a big factor. I actually looked at the market and there was no one selling this product, right?
Wow.
So it was strategic. First product did very good. I think by that time in December, it was up to $15,000 a month. The second product was a great choice as well. There's only one competitor at all of Amazon, and they were totally different direction than my product. So that took off very quickly. And by that time, so December was about $30,000 a month. And I was very proud because everyone that started the same time as me, I was brand new in ASM, a few months old, and I'm at $30,000 a month in their first few
Woo,
months.
That's hot, yeah.
So for all those new sellers, they were like, how did you do that? You know, these guys haven't even got their first product yet.
Yeah.
So,
so you took action quickly.
Quickly. Yeah. I did not hesitate because I was desperate for money and desperate for a new career.
That's so good. Yeah. Okay, great. And then these products, you manufactured these with... How did you manufacture these?
Yeah, so...
the first one, again, you said you had it.
I had it already.
Yeah, that one you already did. Okay, good. Yeah. And then?
So the second one. So now, I was lucky enough, my father was already a manufacturer at that time of beauty products.
Mm-hmm.
He was already still in the same industry that I grew up in, right? So even though I was working for other companies, I went back to him and asked him to make me some products.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I would... of course, be a client of his and pay him. And he was a very small time manufacturer.
Yep.
I mean, we're probably talking, he probably made 1,000 products a day.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Like tops. That was a good day for him. 7,000 products a week that he would manufacture for little tiny clients.
Yeah.
Right. So I went to him and I was like, can you make me these products? So originally for the trade show gig, he did that. So then I ended up somehow clearing out the rest of my trade show inventory. It wasn't very much left.
Okay.
I actually did list it on Amazon and did sell it.
Okay.
But those were products that were not researched, and I probably sold one a week or one a month.
Okay.
So
and you just cleared it out eventually.
Just cleared it out eventually, right? So those products were not niche. So the second product did well. But so this time I still then only had two products on Amazon. I eventually started listing all the rest of my inventory from my trade show days. Started selling those a little bit too. But yeah, he was manufacturer, and that's how I was really quick to the punch.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in sort of this, you know, it's all about who you know type thing. Mm-hmm. I knew my father, and mm-hmm. he was there, and he was already manufacturing. So I was super quick, no turnaround times, no waiting for shipments from China.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's great. That is a big advantage, of course.
Yeah.
And okay, so this company, Private Label Skincare Florida.
Yeah.
Right?
So
okay.
and years later, so now I'm actually I joined forces. After building my own company for years and years, building my own Amazon company, eventually me and my father talked and we decided to combine forces and merge. And now so I'm part of that company as well too, which is Private Label Skincare Florida.
Nice. And so in that, right, I know that all of your formulations, right, you make unique formulations per client, right? So everybody's going to have, you know, when you have a person talking to you, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because some people might want to, okay, they don't want to make a product, another product in China, or maybe they're just starting newly, and they could contact you guys on a contact form on the website, and they'll be like, good, I want this special formula, and you guys can make custom formulations for per client, right? And they could be like, hey, I own this formula for that person.
That's correct, yeah. Okay. So that's, so far we've made thousands of different custom formulations.
Mm-hmm.
We have, up to 30 or 40 requests a week for custom formulations. People come in and they want, you know, a formula of some special new serum mm-hmm. that has Everest flower that only grows in this, and we
the gorilla hair, the gorilla from hair, the one from, gorilla from King Kong,
exactly, like yeah. these very custom formulations that have these unique ingredients and a unique combination of ingredients mm-hmm. They request, and we have connections in all the industry to get all those little ingredients in bulk and in short supply to make samples as well, little tiny orders of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then we make those for whatever client comes along and requests those particular samples, and you know, with an order. So yeah, we have in our books, I don't know how many 10,000 formulations. It's like, it's insane.
Wow, that's great. So the company has grown quite very quickly. So your Amazon company has grown quite a bit. I know that you've grown a lot. And the manufacturing side has also grown, I mean, exponentially from that time when you're making, your dad was making at that time 1,000 units a day. And now, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. So, over the years, originally the way this went is now I launched, of course, that from carrying on this time forward in a nutshell, I launched that second product. And then I launched that third and the fourth, the fifth, et cetera. And I kept going and I added another brand at one point. So I grew that company eventually to about close to 4 million.
Okay.
Right? A year.
Okay.
A year in sales. That was back in 2017.
Okay.
18.
Again, that's a four-year-old company, three-year-old company at the time, 3 or 4 years and 4 million. I mean, that's pretty
from
pretty,
zero
pretty
to 4
hot.
Million
yeah.
in, yeah. In, what is it? Three, mm-hmm. 3 years or mm-hmm. 3 or 4 years. So, at that point, me and my father had been talking, and we spitball an idea one time of merging an event, and then we're like, hey, it might be a bad idea. Maybe we should just combine mm-hmm, forces mm-hmm. and vertically integrate manufacturing and e-commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had some Amazon accounts as well that he wasn't doing anything with.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing very small numbers, mm-hmm. like very tiny. So altogether, we were about equal size of companies. And then once we combined, the company. Went from, I'll freely share the numbers, it went from about 7.6 million a year
mm-hmm.
to over 30 million a year.
Wow.
And that growth was just in the last really 2 years,
that's
3 years.
Combined, you're saying that's the combined one?
The combined,
okay.
Yeah. So that's all combined, all said and done.
That's awesome.
So, and 50% manufacturing and 50%
retail.
E-commerce mm-hmm, retail, mm-hmm. right? So
nice.
It's half and half.
So you're making you guys are making a lot of cash, and you're making a lot of cash for your clients, because I know this area of, let's say, skincare, the margins are pretty healthy. I mean, I think a lot of your clients are doing quite
a lot of clients
amazing.
Are crushing it.
Yeah.
I mean, so because we have such an automated facility now, we have everything down at this point,
mm-hmm.
right? We have from QC to production line to blending the lab, etc. I mean, we have it. It's a very easy, beautiful flow line of manufacture.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've gotten that, well, and because of all the automation and the quantity we can produce nowadays, the prices have gone significantly down for mm-hmm. a buyer.
Mm-hmm.
So, when your buyer goes to buy skincare from China, one, it's scary.
Yes.
Because it's skincare
mm-hmm.
from China,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know what the regulations are there.
Sure.
And let alone if something can happen to your customer, they get a rash, et cetera, you know, your product liability insurance, mm-hmm. up to what amount, you know, et cetera. So when you buy, so in the U.S., we do have a lot of regulations, and there are, which is a good thing, even yes. though it's harder for us sometimes, but we can't send a product down the line without it being thoroughly tested and yep. thoroughly everything. But because we've streamlined that process, we were able to get our prices down really low. And so, yeah, in the end, the client makes a pretty hefty margin
mm-hmm.
And he can sell a $40, $30 or $20 item, beauty item on Amazon when he pays $2 or $3 or $4, right?
Yeah, that's brilliant. Guys, and one thing I always talk about is the ROI, right? Because if you're buying a product, like if you're buying a physical product, let's say you're selling a pen, sometimes you're not going to be able to sell a pen for more than $4 or like $5. And yeah. you know what I mean? Or a pack of pens for $5 and you're spending whatever. Like there's not that much room on there. So this is a way to have a special product where it's no one is going to copy you because they do not have your formula, right?
Yep.
So what do people do? So let's say someone's like, yeah, I want to do a skincare, right? They contact Private Label Skincare Florida and they go, we have this formulation X, I did this research on Amazon. What do you see the difference between people doing skincare that just tank and the guys that actually do well? Like it's, I from, again, my experience, but you can clarify, sometimes the price is, nobody wants to buy like a $4 face cream, right? Like it just, nobody, they're like, I'm scared of that thing. In the physical product space, it's very different. If you have like a $4 whatever set of pens, like people will buy it like crazy. But in creams and the stuff, like what is it that makes people sell?
So that's going to be, I mean, there's so many factors. And beauty becomes a whole new animal than compared to other products due to the fact that there is a feeling mm-hmm. of buying products in beauty.
Mm-hmm.
There is an aesthetic and there is a certain beauty that products have to have. There's a certain display they have to have. So the person, a beauty product actually has to solicit an emotional response
mm-hmm.
from the first visual of that product, which, and then they have to understand and they have to feel like it's a clean skincare product, right? So it's not full of harsh chemicals. It's a healthy skincare product
mm-hmm.
and it's safe for their skin
mm-hmm.
and they can trust that brand, right? So you have to communicate. If you can, a seller that communicates all those things with his packaging design
mm-hmm.
are the winning sellers, right? You know, there's also lots of trends too. So if you can communicate that with also the trend of like in beauty, people love that small business feel now,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not about the Ultas and the Sephoras and the huge brands and mm-hmm. the Drunk Elephant. Of course, there's always a demographic that loves that too. That's a huge company. But what's happening more and more nowadays is the small guy, people are supporting the mom and pop beauty,
mm-hmm.
but they have to also communicate they're healthy, clean, and they, you know, they really took their time to make it vegan and really good for you and really healthy, full of superfoods for your skin
mm-hmm,
and blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you can, and that's sort of what's happening nowadays, and that's what's trending. We have hit a lot of that. You know, we are a small company. We're yes. not a huge corporation,
correct.
Right?
Yep. Family owned. I mean, hey,
well,
father and son kind
yeah.
of.
And my brother works there. My sister
yeah.
works
there.
There you go.
Well,
the whole family is basically working there now, right?
Yeah.
So it's definitely a family business. So, and yeah, in the end, that's how a lot of our stuff is branded. Right? We crush it because people want to support that small business, right? And then, you know, and then there's the huge companies, but it's a good feeling when you buy that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can communicate that in your label and really give that emotional, solicit that emotional response in the beauty, you'll have it. Like,
mm-hmm.
you got it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you can compete against these huge companies very easily because the customer wants to support you. They already
mm-hmm.
know these guys have billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
So what certifications do you put on? So, like, vegan, the products that are vegan, that you sell the vegan,
mm-hmm.
what other, like, certifications does the factory or, you know, the manufacturing facility that you guys have, what can you or what do you use on some products?
Oh, I mean, for sure, it's made in the USA.
Yep.
It's cruelty-free,
yep.
paraben-free, sulfate-free. There's basic, you know, chemicals. There's, you know, no There's other certifications that we'll do to kind of indicate. We'll also do a clean skin care as well. That's, you know, you can add little labels to that. A lot of your design will just indicate that naturally, that it's clean skin care. So, you know, in our facility, like to adding to the label of those little crucial elements in the beauty category, those are super important. People want to see that they have trust. You know, the we have a you know, made in the USA. People like that as well. Because,
yeah, made in the USA, I think that's a great one.
Yeah, we are locally made. I mean, so with the cruelty-free, that's also a big one as well, too. So those...
And how do you do that? Is that like, do you have to set up with some agency that sets you up as cruelty-free, or how do you...
Some of these things, yeah. But I mean, in terms of labeling the product, if you are not cruelty-free and you actually test your product in animals, then, or your manufacturer does, if you are caught putting that on a label, you can get in trouble from...
you're free to put it on your label though.
If there's no,
if you guys are not testing on animals, which you're not, right?
Yeah. So yeah. You know, things like that, definitely put it on your label if you are not doing it. You confirm your manufacturer is not, you know, like we are the manufacturer, we do not test our product in animals. We do you know, certain tests, lab tests, and also what's called a patch test to make sure that they do not react or have any adverse reactions on human skin. So that way we certify the product is clean and good to go. So, I mean, there's definitely some regulations on what you put in the label and what you can't, but it's pretty easy to follow once you understand the basics of it.
Okay, nice, nice. And then, so back to like just Amazon and getting the things visible on there. So in terms of spending time on ads, right? Let's just talk about like an ad strategy. Let's say someone's has a product and for some reason it's not selling. What could you do? Or what do you do? Like, okay, this product, let's say, is not selling as expected. What do you do, just taking from like step zero, like to optimize it, right? You have like a few hours and you're just like, hey, let me fix this product using the ads. It sold a little bit organically. The ads are not doing well. What is kind of your strategy?
To revive, I always call this reviving the dead, right? Okay. Now, I always find it tough sometimes, especially if the product's been sitting at Amazon for a long time, with being a non-seller or being a dead product, right? So my phrase that I always say is it's easier to give birth to the living than revive the dead. So I love launching new products. And it's very easy because Amazon gives you a lot of reward for a new product. Amazon loves new products as well. So when there are a lot of attempts, though, I will give. If I have inventory, I launched a product. 2 months later, I look back. I did a ton of stuff to launch it. And it's still not really selling. It's losing keyword ranking. There's a couple of things I look at. The first thing I'll look at is their PPC campaign set up and are they working? Are they functioning correctly? Are they getting impressions? Are they getting clicks? Are they getting bids?
Yep.
And if I see all those things are occurring, but none of the keywords are converting.
So it is getting clicks. It's getting clicks, getting impressions.
They're
fine.
Yeah. So that's the first step. Now, most of the time, though, I find out if the product seems to have good reviews and everything seems fine with the product, I'll most of the time find out that it's not getting clicks and it's not getting impressions. Most of your problems are going to be that. I've encountered many scenarios on this. So the next scenario is, so I kind of have a checklist. The next scenario I'll go through is, okay, if it's getting clicks, getting impressions, but no one seems to want to buy it, what's wrong?
Yeah.
Right? So now I'll actually take a kind of detailed look at the product listing. And I have people that do this now, but I'll look at every little detail from the title to the pictures to the bullet points to the enhanced brand content. That's the whole, you know, the whole listing of the product with all the graphic images. I'll take a look at everything. And then if I really just see that the product is 3.5 stars, like, well, that makes sense, right? It instantly I found out why the product's not selling. It's because it's a really low star rating. Yep. Something actually legitimately went wrong with this product along the line, and people didn't like it, right? It burned their skin or did this or did that, whatever. Usually it's not burn the skin. It's you know, it didn't specify that it's a body cream, not a face cream, so it burned their face, right? Yeah, so yeah. I should have made the directions more clear, right?
Yeah.
Whatever problem occurred, then now I have to actually, what I do is I'll put it on a relaunch list. I'll rework the product, I'll rework the labeling, rework the directions, and then attempt to relaunch it now with a new ASIN. Okay. So this means a slight
modification. You've changed the label. Technically speaking, on Amazon, if you change the label of a product, you're supposed to make a new ASIN. Now, again, it's even talking to Amazon reps, they're like, well, you can't always do that. Like, God, I just changed the label. But with the terms of service, as long as you change the product a little bit, you can, you're actually allowed to make another ASIN.
Yep. So that, which is what I do. The product always requires a change at that point, right? The label requires a change. Mm-hmm. The formulation requires a change.
Okay.
Something went wrong.
Yes.
So most of the time, there is something to correct.
Okay, good.
Because people don't like it, right? So I'm going to fix the parts. I'm going to look at the reviews. Mm-hmm. I'm going to see the parts they didn't like, right? Because the traffic was not converting, right? So I know, and I saw the negative reviews and didn't like it. Now, if the product is, so at that point, that's a whole different process and it kind of goes off to two different paths, right? If the product does have good reviews and it is 4 or 5 stars, 4.5 stars, I'll see like a 4-star product. I know the advertising will convert, but it won't convert that well sometimes.
Yep.
But if I have 4.5-star product or above and the advertising is still, I mean, most of the time the advertising is going to convert. It just means you don't have enough campaigns or enough keywords, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty much 99% of the time I find. Sometimes though, I do find the product, has something kind of blatantly or obviously wrong, or it's just angled slightly wrong from the perspective that the buyer would have.
Like the main image, or you mean like the positioning of the product itself?
The positioning of the product. Okay. Like it's the problem it's supposed to handle, or the thing it's supposed to be good for.
Yep.
It's not really hitting that, right? Hitting, it's going in a different direction.
It's a rash cream, but then the pictures are all about, I don't know.
Beautiful skin and makeup and girls, right? It's got great stars on it, but the pictures all reflect like just a beautiful, you know, summer day and a girl and with makeup on, you're like, but it's a rash cream, right? Let's throw some rashes, right? Something obvious like that will usually be occurring. Otherwise, in theory, every single product on Amazon will sell.
Mm-hmm.
With good star ratings, with relevant, good content, you'll crush it. And as long as you have your PPC on and your campaigns are getting impressions and clicks, and they will generate sales.
And so, and let's say it's not getting as many clicks or impressions, like how do you find the best keywords to advertise it? What's your strategy in terms of in the ads, the time spent in the campaign manager? Like what are the things that you're going to do?
So that's going to be a lot of keyword research generally. So I'm going to use a software program called Helium 10 mainly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I love Helium 10. This software program has 15 software programs within it under one login, which is great. So they have a reverse ASIN tool, which basically allows you to take any ASIN and pull up all the keywords that it's ranking for and indexed for, which is great. So then you could pull – so those words that – already Amazon has predetermined your product.
So you're reverse acing your own ASIN or a competitor.
So I'm reverse acing. Okay. Yeah. So I will absolutely do my competitors as well too and gather keywords that way. But I want to see already, my first strategy is I want to get my own top keywords that Amazon already considered my product relevant for.
Okay.
Right? It's easy. It's low hanging fruit. If there's something wrong with the advertising, I don't have those in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to individually be aggressively pushing those keywords. Next, I'm going to do the same thing to my competitor's listing with reverse ASIN tool, right?
Okay.
I'm going to get my own low-hanging fruit, then I'm going to get everyone else's. So first, I'm going to go after all that low-hanging fruit. And then at that point, there's more keyword research I'll do just based on a keyword phrase, similar phrase, etc. I've only given a lot of staff to this. I haven't done this myself in a very long time. But yeah, there's
so
many options.
So the ones that Amazon already likes you for that keyword. Well, if you advertise on it, then you get more spots and hopefully you'll also rank for that product. You'll get sales.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
The thing will just roll.
I mean, if you notice, like if Amazon already gave you a keyword that was good search volume, I usually only go for 1,000 searches and above.
Mm-hmm.
If it gave you that keyword, it already has good search volume. Amazon's like, hey, you're ranking number 15 for this product already. The product just launched you're just kind of sitting there. I'm like, great. So now I'm going to I'll actually search for that keyword myself in mobile and incognito. And I'll look to see like, wow, Amazon considers me relevant for this keyword, but I'm ranking number 22 organically and I don't have any ads, right? Or ranking number 15 organically, but I have no ads. I'm not even showing up anyplace. I already know there's a history with me and Amazon in that keyword. So of course I'm going to take now the number one or number two spot on advertising. Because it's going to convert. And most of the time it does, right? Sometimes it doesn't, but either way, I'm going to be aggressive with that keyword. So
do you know the bid, like your starting bid? So like, are you using like the suggested bid? Are you going above the suggested bid? How are you calculating kind of your bids?
specifically for keyword ranking strategies, I'm going to the tip top.
The top of the suggested.
Top of the suggested. Okay. So I'm, well, I mean, honestly, I've adjusted bids to go $7 to make sure I get the number spot sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Because I just have decided that keyword was my keyword.
Mm.
And I've objectively or subjectively decided that I'm going to get that number one keyword. And there's been a lot of times that it's been very expensive, but in the end, the bid cost has come down and mm-hmm. I've ranked really well. Last year, I did that with the products that I had that were COVID related.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up and I would put $10 bids on some words to make sure that I held that number one spot.
And these are products that are how, like $40, $30, like $7 not on a $7 item. Like not a sale price of $7.
You're not going to bid $7. Okay, higher AOV products, yeah, right? Yeah. So typically a lot of these products will go from $25 to $40 to $50.
Okay.
So I do have, even with a $25 product, you have some room to advertise. If you're selling a $7 product, you can't go that high
on bids,
right?
So, I think a lot of people will say you can never go that high, like $7.
Oh, well, some people say that.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah. I just want to win, right? So I'll whatever it takes.
But realistically, unless someone listens to this podcast episode, some people will not even come to their mind to even think about bidding that high. Like, they're just not going to. Like, it's just not even a thought process. So I'm assuming you're probably not paying $7 for a click because you're going to pay what the second person had the highest bid for.
That's correct. Most of the time it's going to be $3.30 right. Or, you know, every once in a while there is a keyword that
someone else had that idea.
Yeah.
You got three people bidding $7. Amazon's going to charge you
$7. Another guy had the same idea as me. It was like, this is my keyword. I'm taking it. I don't care what I have to pay.
Yeah.
And then I go, well, it's my keyword. And then we just start battling it out. Right. And then I usually am a little tougher and a little stronger than him and he'll give out first and then I'll do that. And sometimes I'm so dedicated to getting a keyword, I'll just keep writing it, even with a really high ACOS, ACOS, which is the average cost of sale.
Yep.
Now, also, I don't really care if I'm spending $100 to make $100 in advertising on that product, right? Mm-hmm. Or even spending $120 to make $100. I don't really go by that metric. I go by the total cost of the advertising sale.
The
right?
tacos. Are the tacos. Yeah, so like your spend versus your total sales on the product or on the account or whatever.
I go by a trend, right? I'm going to look at, am I gaining keyword ranking? Mm-hmm. Is this product increasing in keyword ranking? Fine, I spent a lot of money in ads for that product yesterday, but did it go above my tolerable threshold?
Mm-hmm.
So I actually give myself some playroom within a product. If a product is generating $20,000 in sales a day, right? I will gladly spend $2,500, right? $3,000 on that product to keep it growing it or expanding it. You know, in an ideal world, I like to spend 10%.
Yep.
Right? Like everything to be 10% tacos. But with growth, get a little aggressive sometimes. So overall, you know, sometimes we right now we're about 15% for the entire account.
Yep.
In growth mode.
Yeah, and for a product that's a repeat customer, that's definitely pretty good, I would say. I mean, because a lot of those guys will just keep buying.
Yep. If you have a consumable product, I mean, that's a whole other thing to consider. There's AOV and there's LTV, so the lifetime value of each customer. Now, given the fact that, I mean, I looked at my metrics recently, it's not amazing how many repeat customers buy, but it increases every year. We keep adding them on. So it's definitely a very workable strategy when you have a consumable to really invest in your future.
Yeah. Okay, nice. Okay, great. And so just kind of parting words, right? Let's say someone is like, hey, I'm done with China. I don't want to sell any more China products. I want to make stuff here in the U.S. Like, what do you think is a good reason for someone to make, let's say, a product here in the U.S. or make a cream or, you know, make something proprietary, you know, work with Private Label Skincare Florida, kind of approach something in that fashion? What have you seen the benefits? What have you seen, like, why would you someone do that?
Why would someone buy from the U.S. basically, or a manufacturer like me?
U.S. or from you guys, you know what I mean? Or both, or whichever one you want to feel like talking about.
I mean, being in manufacturing for how long, since I was a kid, I've seen, and touring many manufacturing facilities, I've seen it all, and I've been to China as well, and I've seen manufacturing facilities there for beauty at one point as well. So I've seen it all, and I've seen the processes. Are we better than everybody else? Yeah, we are. Like, after seeing it all, and one thing that you don't know about the cosmetic industry is how many products in the beauty and skincare, how many products test live or test hot for bacteria. Many manufacturers will go, if you go and walk into manufacturing to look at their SOPs for, their cleaning process, their, when they use the tubes and how they clean out the tubes and they're done, there's all these little things that a lot of people haven't scaled for. It's not that it's their fault. They haven't learned to do it yet. They haven't been, there's not really a lot of force down on that, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of customers are actually very, what's one of the first questions is, are your products, are they tested? Are they, right? And so we provide all the results for them, right? So that's a big difference in us. I'm not saying every manufacturer has that. There's a lot of big manufacturers actually do a very good job with microbes, it's called, right? So that's one thing that we have basically like an entire division of our company dedicated toward is we have a statistics monitoring that. We have zero rate of that ever occurring. If it ever does occur, it's an instant quarantine, right? So most manufacturers don't go to that extent. Okay. So, but in terms of us too, our lead times are way faster. Our products probably are in the end the same price as China, except you don't pay for shipping, right? And then you're getting a much higher quality product that's from the US, et cetera. So, I don't really want to, I'm not actually in the manufacturing part of the company.
Yeah.
So I could say that from being a buyer of the manufacturer, which I really do, I provide, all of my products are from that same manufacturer, which is us.
Yeah.
They are very high quality products. Five-star products. I get so many good reviews. Occasionally, I have a bad idea, and it's more that my idea was a bad idea, so the product gets low reviews.
Yeah, yeah.
And even occasionally, there is a product that, wasn't formulated correctly.
Yeah.
But that has really happened recently, later we've gotten.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned before, let's say back in the earlier days, right, someone might have had issues with a product because you had before outsourced some of this manufacturing process, and that has changed, like,
yeah.
What about the transition? You want to talk about the transition briefly?
Yeah, we used to get our blending done. So this is basically the big vats of product, of a beauty product that is mixed together. We used to have that outsourced to a third-party facility. We had to stop because the product kept coming back hot, right? Yeah. So they did not have the SOPs and everything in place to make clean skincare, right? Or bacteria-free skincare. Bacteria skincare tends to cause breakouts and a bunch of other stuff too, right? So once we found that out, we immediately cut the cord and brought blending in-house as well to have our own standard operating procedures integrated with our own blending facility to not have any micro issues or blending issues or the product would be hot, right? So, and then also everything, of course, is triple tested and all our products are sent in a quarantine area for 72 hours to make sure they don't grow anything. It's very common in the skincare industry for products to grow.
Really?
Cultures of stuff. You'd be surprised. Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, I think that's a good time to end. I'll leave the idea with the growing skincare.
It's fascinating.
So, okay, good. So thanks so much for coming and, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Pleasure.
Okay, awesome.
A pleasure.
See you guys. Bye.